This is the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys Network. Here's your host, Will Hill.
Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys. Coming up on the show, Kelly Bidlin of the Long Shots podcast and VSiN will join us. We'll go over the Masters. We'll go over some NBA as the NBA regular season winds down. It ends on Sunday. And as little time as I spent on it during the regular season, I am very excited for these playoffs. As I mentioned, pretty balanced playoffs. We got a shocking story on Tuesday afternoon out of nowhere. Mike Malone, the Nuggets coach, as well as the GM, both get fired. So we'll get Kelly's thoughts on anybody he's looking at here in the playoffs. Go in depth on the Masters, who to bet, who not to bet, how to bet, some of the derivative markets. So excited to talk to Kelly about all of that. But as we start here, I will put a bow on the college basketball season and what was a really good championship game and a fantastic Final Four. Now, people can quibble and say, you know, nobody shot the ball well. It was ugly. I understand Houston did not get a shot off their last attempt, and I believe their last two attempts, and it was a little anticlimactic. It was a strange ending for sure. I mean, you sit there, edge of your seat, all right, coming out of a timeout, two-point game, they got the ball. This is the stuff where, boy, if you ever hit a three to win it, that's going to live in tournament lore forever. Let's see what happens. And to get caught in the air, put the ball down, kind of box out almost like a special teams player in football, staying away from a punt, letting it roll. It was a very, very strange ending. And I'm sure I felt bad for Sharp. I felt bad for Sampson too, the Houston coach. And Sharp was the player who jumped up. Clayton, give him credit. He flew around those screens and just did a tremendous job closing out. I wonder if Sharp, who's I'm sure going to think about that play, I'm sure a day later, he's thought about that play 100 times. I'm sure he had a hard time sleeping thinking about that play, and he'll think about that play. Sadly, the rest of his life, that's just how these things go. You know, when you play sports, especially a moment like that, I wonder if he would have done one of two things and done it differently. Just jump straight up and hope for a foul call, because Clayton was coming around so hot, jumping so hot around the corner that maybe you get some body-to-body contact. He hits a hand, he hits an elbow. And I understand that maybe he, if you go up, he's just going to block the shot and the ball's going to fly into the backcourt and then the game's really going to be over. And it's just a split second decision. So I thought maybe, you know what, you hope for some contact and a bailout foul where you get three free throws. And I also thought, you know what, probably better off, even once you got caught in the air, just keep going, just grab the ball again. All right, they're going to call a travel. But maybe the ref doesn't call the travel. Maybe he swallows his whistle. Maybe he's too tight. He misses the call, whatever. And even still, if he does call it, you still got around a little under 5 seconds to go in the game. You can foul and hope to extend the game somehow. Because you put the ball on the ground like that and you start to just box people out, tick, tick, tick. By the time there's a scrum forward, it gets batted around, the game is over. So tough sequence for Houston. It did feel like for most of the night, it was Houston's time. It felt like Houston's time. Felt like Kelvin Sampson's time, a guy who's been around coaching forever, 69 years old. You know, he's been close a bunch of times. Houston's been close a bunch of times. It just felt like this was their time. But that's the thing about sports, and that's the thing about life. Sometimes your time just never comes, and it feels like maybe their time. Maybe it's next year. Maybe it's the year after. Who knows? They're a good program. They're in the mix here a lot. But that felt like they're up 10 in the title game in the second half. That's about as close as you're going to get to holding up the trophy without being able to do it. And there were just some heartbreaking losses in this tournament. Houston, Duke, I'm sure there were some teams last night, this morning, that are sick to their stomach. I'm sure Duke watching that is still sick to their stomach, saying, man, if we had just won that, held on against Houston, that the way Florida played Monday and their lack of shooting, some of that was Houston's defense. I understand that. But if you got that level of performance from Florida with the way Duke plays, I think Duke would have beaten them pretty comfortably. Texas Tech watches Florida hold it up and say, man, we were up 9 with a couple minutes to go. UConn's up 6 in the second half. I'm sure they're thinking, man, we had the title team, the championship team beat in the second round. What would have happened if we won? I don't think anyone thinks UConn was winning a championship. But who knows, with the way the bracket broke, could UConn won another game or two and got back to a Final Four and then taking their chances? I'm sure there's a lot of teams looking around saying, man, we had our chances. And Florida really just danced between the raindrops this entire tournament. Down 9 second half to Auburn, down 9, like I mentioned, a couple minutes left against Texas Tech, down 6 in the second half to UConn, and then down 10 to Houston. in the second half. So give credit to Florida. They win the championship. I thought for a second, it crossed my mind. I've seen interviews with Golden in the past, and I saw one thing on Monday. Actually, it's amazing the scenario actually came up that during COVID with the time off when he was coaching San Francisco, he talked to Ken Pomeroy, the guy we all know is Ken Pom, about the analytics and late game situations. And he's a believer in fouling up too if you get the right free throw shooter, because a couple things. You can't lose. It takes away the three. And it guarantees yourself the last shot, even if they hit both of them. And if they don't hit both of them, then you're likely getting the ball back with the lead. You have a chance to really ice the game. I thought for a second he might have done it. Maybe if it was the right free throw shooter, that would have come up. But that was not the case. Florida wins. Really good championship game. Really good Final Four. You know, you can quibble with, it wasn't a lot of offense. It was sloppy. It was ugly. Oh, that's true, I guess, but I enjoyed it. You got three really good games on the whole, three really good Final Four games after a pretty lousy tournament. I thought the Final Four salvaged some of it. I mentioned before, a lot of people, what they like about the tournament is the upsets, the buzzer beaters, the abundance of games in the first few rounds. And once you don't get that, people sour on it. But as far as the basketball from this weekend, the two games on Saturday and then the championship game Monday, that's really good. It's about as good as it gets. Good teams, high-level games, high-level teams, really outstanding basketball, despite the fact that, you know, the shooting wasn't great. It wasn't pretty at times. And the refs, I thought, really, and every time I talk about the refs, I mention that I don't like talking about the refs, but, and I don't think they decided this game one way or another. I did think there was a close, probably a goaltend that Florida got the benefit of that they didn't call. That would have been two more extra points for Houston. And you know, who knows, we're going to overtime if it plays out the same way. They let everything go in the first half. Then they were calling everything in the second half. It was the complete opposite. They were calling stuff off the ball, offensive fouls off the ball. You know what? Pick a lane, either let them play, don't let them play. And I'm not one of these people, oh, you can't call a foul because there's so much time left, or you can't call a time. You can't call a foul that part of the game. If it's a foul, it's a foul, it's a foul. You're not allowed to get away with fouling just because there's only a few minutes left. That being said, some of the stuff off the ball, the incidental contact, the stuff that can go either way, the stuff that you can let go, I thought they went out of their way to really blow the whistle and change how they officiated the game in the second half. But I enjoyed the game. And you know what? Another thing I enjoyed, I'm one to complain about these schedules and the time of these games. They moved it up a good half hour. It started 8:50 Eastern. Usually that title game starts 9:10, 9:15. Made a big, big difference. Maybe even 9:20 last year. Because I remember it was either last year or the year before, it was like 11 o'clock at night in the second half. Either was, had it started, was there just about to start. The fact that it started at 8:50 and it started right at 8:50 and they had a first half with no fouls. You look up, it's like 9:35 the first half ended, or close to the end of the first half. It was much different. It was a much more just friendly start time for people on the East Coast, where you're not staying up till midnight to watch this thing. All right, 9:30, the first half is over. We have the halftime. That's still too long, but it was a reasonable time. It was a reasonable hour, and I thought that was a really welcome addition. Hopefully they continue to do that, and maybe even move it up a little bit. You know, 8:15, 8:30, 8 o'clock. The earlier the better. I know you don't want to start at, you know, 6, 7 o'clock where people on the West Coast aren't home from work. There has to be a happy balance, but I thought 8:50 was a nice compromise. I thought it was a good change, a good little amendment they made. And man, just to reiterate, I did feel bad for Sampson in Houston. That is quite the 180. I mean, think about the high you're on that Saturday night around midnight when you beat Duke, you come back, you beat this unbeatable Duke team, you're down 9 with a couple minutes to go, you're down 6 with 30 seconds to go, and you win that game, you're going to the championship. Think about that feeling, all the text messages and phone calls you're getting, what a great moment that is for your players, your team, and then to turn around less than 48 hours later and to be on the other side of it, to lose and blow a 10-point lead, that's a tough one. That is a tough one. That is why sports can be absolutely so cruel. That just change in emotion, the change of feeling to be on the other side of it so quickly after is a tough one. But Florida is a champion. I would mention next year's odds. You know, the usual suspects are near the top, Houston and Kansas and Duke and UConn. We don't know who's going to be on any of these teams with the transfer portal. It's like everyone starts with a blank roster every year. So trying to discuss, you know, who's going to be, who's a sleeper, who's a best bet, it's really, really difficult for me to do. So it's really a fruitless exercise. But Glad we were able to salvage it. Glad we were able to get a good Final Four after a tournament filled with chalk and filled with blowouts. We got three really good games, exciting games. Florida Auburn wasn't a great game, but it was good enough. That was a, BB minus game. That was down to the wire. That was a fun game. And then Duke Houston's an absolute classic that will live forever. And then Florida Houston, look, 2-point game in the title game. Team down two has the ball. You had a comeback. You had some good performances. You had a little bit of everything. So it was a lot of fun. So coming up, we will switch gears. We'll talk some Masters. We'll talk some NBA playoffs. That is next. This is Should've Bet More Podcast. All right, we are back. You can catch him on the Long Shots Podcast, a numbers game, VSiN Live Bet Sunday. He's all over VSiN, and he joins us again is the great Kelly Bidlin. Kelly, what's up, man? It's Masters Week. How are you?
I'm doing great, Will. Always great to be back with you on the pod. Great to be talking golf, NBA, whatever else we're going to kick around. Who knows, man?
Yep, we'll get to some NBA because that's the one thing about March Madness. You pay so much attention to the tournament and you look up and all of a sudden, boom, we got play-ins not that far away. Last day of the season, not that far away. So we'll get into that. But Masters, before we get into who you actually bet, what's just an overview of how you attack this tournament?
Yeah, good question. I think there's a couple things people need to keep in mind. It's definitely one of the few, but probably the only tournament that I do this with where you are adding some outrights as you're leading up to it. Start of the season that you're betting, and you start to see how some golfers are looking and who might project well going forward. And just almost like any sport you're betting, you're trying to get CLV when you're trying to grab some of these outrights further out. So I usually have a couple, two, three, four sometimes that I've bet before even Masters Week rolls around. A little lighter for me this year. I only had two that I bet early: Sepp Straka and Akshay Bhatia. But then, yeah, you roll into Masters Week, and I think a couple things you need to keep in mind. This is We've gotten kind of used to the signature events with smaller fields now with no cut. But then, okay, you go to the Masters, and it's a smaller field, but okay, you got the live guys that are back in play. This is not the and then even separate those guys. This is not the cream of the crop PGA Tour class that you usually get at the signature events. You've got all the past champions and old guys that are playing here. You got the amateurs that they're working in to the Masters. So I think more than anything is just realizing, if you are a golf bettor or newer golf bettor, just realizing the field and how different it is than pretty much any tournament that you're going to deal with throughout the season. And then as far as a major goes, it's the only major that we play at the same golf course every single year. So there is a lot of course history that you can fall back on, and it is the most heavily correlated when it comes to course success at the Masters to having success in this tournament and projecting that forward. So I think those are kind of the biggest things of just kind of where do you start with, and what how you're going into this tournament with things to recognize. Having said all that, Will, it's still, I'm still really focusing in on guys that are playing well and coming in on good recent form, and that you're then confident can beat a field as talented as the Masters is every year.
And before we get to who you bet, who else you're looking at here, who are guys you'd absolutely stay away from considering their price and considering their game and their strengths and weaknesses?
Yeah, it's a great question because I think this is a really interesting year when it comes to that. Look, I think Scheffler is, because of the price, I have to stay away right now. And I think that's been too overblown, his struggles or whatever we want to call Scheffler's season so far. But I think the big difference between him and a Rory McIlroy is there's a lot of people excited about Rory heading into this Masters. And I get it. This is as good a form as Rory McIlroy has entered into a Masters in a very, very, very long time. And that's why there is some excitement, and I think some rightful excitement, correct excitement over him heading into this Masters. And meanwhile, the past few years, we have seen Scottie Scheffler racked up wins or multiple wins in a lot of seasons before we've gotten to this point, and he has not done that yet. So I think Scheffler for me is. Well, he is absolutely right up there. I think it is a very good chance that either him or Rory McIlroy ends up walking away with this thing. But just from what I've seen from those two so far, it makes it very easy for me to prefer a Rory McIlroy over a Scottie Scheffler. And then, I think for other guys to stay away from, it's the, I, the, you know, it depends on how much questions you have. Like I do plenty with some of the live guys. Jon Rahm, unquestioned winner. We've seen do it for a long time on different tours. Go look what he's done on LIV this year. He's been good. He's been great. He's top 10 in every single event that he's played in so far, but he hadn't won any, Will. And we're talking about those are even smaller fields that are not as good as what some of these PGA Tour guys are playing in the signature event. So I think Rahm's a tough one for me to figure out. I usually never question his talent, and I don't question his talent, but when you see those results, and I think still the question remains with LIV of how – where are these guys at with the seriousness of when they're approaching golf in their game that are over on LIV right now, instead, you know, with just collecting paychecks and being okay with that? And I think that question is still a big one with a lot of these guys. So Rahm, it really very little interest for me at that price for getting involved. Would it be surprised if he won? No. Bryson, I think, is very similar. I think he's going to be popular. At least we've seen him win a major here in the past year. So I think there is that to go off of with him. But man, Bryson, Brooks, I'd throw in that camp. Joaquin Neiman is a guy who I have bet a ton over the years when he was on the PGA Tour, even in the past couple years, have bet him at some majors, thinking there was some excitement with a still young, growing player. The problem is just really where you see where he's finished in majors, and it's really not been all that successful major finishes for him over the years. So really for a lot of the LIV guys, it's kind of cross off because there's too many other guys you can look at and make a good case for.
All right, who did you ultimately land on? What's the account look like, and what if anything, are you looking to add between now and when the tournament starts?
Yeah, will do. I'm just trying. I'm scrolling down some of the list here. Like Victor Hovland. Yeah, like there's a lot of other guys you got to be careful thinking about, Will, because it's like Victor Hovland has one win. Other than that, he hasn't really done much. And he's looked really bad at times this year. So like he was an easy cross off for me. And then there's the guys that I think are tough questions. Ludvig Ober, Justin Thomas, Hideki Matsuyama. At times this year, they have looked like top players on the PGA Tour. But they have not been able, almost any of them, been able to put together anything consistently. So I think those guys are all part of the group. Would I be stunned if they won? No, because we've seen the game, and we've seen the game from them even this season. But, man, too many questions in an event like the Masters for me to go back in them with money. So I think that's really just kind of when we look at the top of the board, kind of how I'm approaching things. I mentioned earlier that the two bets that I did make in the months leading up was Akshay Bhatia and Sepp Straka. I have bet a lot of Sepp Straka this year. I really like where his game is at. I'm glad I picked up the 100-1 early on him. I still think that the number you can get him at now is too long for how good his game is currently. You could find him 70-75 to 1. I bet that outright. I have backed it up though with a top 20 play on him, with a top 5 play on him this week. And kind of, you know, if you have each way betting available to you, that's kind of how I'd approach that. It's just an each way bet, probably on 5 places with Straka bet outright, and then the 5 places on the each way market. That's probably how I would bet him this week. But I also bet him in the top 20. You're talking about a guy that top 20 finishes this year. He's had 7 already this season. He finished T16 at the Masters last year. We know how important Masters experience is. And man, he's one of the best ball strikers in the field, really accurate off the tee, great on approach so far this season, 5th in par 5 scoring in this field. I think his scrambling will be tested a little bit, but man, I think he's got the game to get it done. And that's a long, long number on a guy like that, that he honestly at an event, well, I don't really consider that many long shots at. So he's a guy that I bet a couple months ago, I would still bet at current price. I've bet him this week already in top 20s and a top 5, like I mentioned. The other guy that jumped out to me this week at a little bit longer price was Shane Lowry. Bet him at 45-20. He's another guy that I have bet a fair amount of this year to differing results. But man, I do like how his game fits, and it's worth mentioning, but you know, whenever we see weather, I think he's a guy that you get excited about too. But this, the Masters and Augusta is so unique because you want guys that are dangerous off the tee, that have the distance off the tee. There's not very penal rough here, so the guys can kind of grip it and rip it, but it's really a second shot golf course. You're looking for those guys that are on a really strong on approach. Problem is that you're still, it is, this is such a tough test for your approach game that these guys have to be good on and around the greens. And I think Shane Lowry is at least a guy that you can look for and say, you know what? He's 12th in scrambling, coming in here. He's probably, he's a top 15 guy when it comes to this field with scrambling and around the green play, which makes you feel a little confident. And he's great on approach. So if he can get the driver to go this week, he's not the longest guy off the tee. Him and Straka both. And I emphasize distance this week. So where they rated out to me was a little bit of a surprise. But he's still rated out very highly for me. A lot of quality finishes this year. T8, the Valspar, T20 at the Players, 7th at the API, 2nd at Pebble. He's a guy who's played some really good golf this year and had some good results at the Masters. T45, T16, 3rd, T21, and T25, his last 5 appearances here. So he was an outright ad for me. I also covered him. Usually what I'll do is an outright in the top 5. I actually just covered him with a top 10, be a little looser with him, so 3-1 on a top 10. I went to the guy, the name, I mentioned it a little bit earlier, Will, but the guy that I ended up sinking my, I knew I was going to play those longer shots and I was considering top of the board and how I was going to handle it. Cause I do expect a class player to win this week. I'm bought in, man. Hook, line, and sinker, Rory McIlroy. We could complete the career grand slam this week. I really think he does. Bet him at a little over 7-1 outright. And then a top 5 on Rory. I think he is the top player heading into this tournament and the guy to beat out there. And when you are seeing the odds difference between where him and Scheffler are at, I think he's the play this week in the outright market. So he is the guy that I've really sunk the most money into. So that's everybody that I've got outrights on, and I can go through to some of the other bets that jumped out to me.
What about first round leader? People like the instant gratification. People like the long payouts. Is there anyone where you attack this market? You say, I don't think this guy can hold up over 4 days, but I could see him getting hot on Thursday and cashing a ticket for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I haven't made any bets yet. First round leader, I love to bet. I usually have a bet in that market, at least kind of one guy every single week. I love it. I do think that there are, like you laid it out, Will, I think there are opportunities for guys that you know can get hot. I mean, Keith Mitchell, the past 3 weeks, is the perfect example. He's a top 10 ball striker on the PGA Tour when it comes to what he can do off the tee and on approach. It's just usually what he does on the greens and around the greens that holds him back. And that's what you need to sustain through a tournament through 4 rounds. To get hot for 1 round, yeah, okay, he putters hot for 1 round. A guy like him can cruise up there. That's why he's had a share of the first-round lead or been one shot off the first-round lead for 3 straight weeks. So I think you look for guys like that. One guy that jumps out to me is Lucas Glover, an excellent approach player who's got troubles on the green, but he'll keep it straight off the tee. He will be solid with his irons. He always is. I think he's a guy that I'm targeting. I have written down right now as a possible play. He's a guy rated out pretty high for me overall, but I won't be playing him in any tournament long bets at all. And then Robert McIntyre, who's a guy I think you're going to hear his name a lot this week. But I will be playing him probably in the first round leader market. And then I have a top 20 bet on him at a pretty big, I staked pretty heavily as well, plus 138. That's how I'm attacking. I didn't go full outright with McIntyre. I don't think he's going to get there, but I could very, very easily see him near the top of the board. He's had some great finishes this year. He is a, you know what, T9 in Singapore, 9th at the Players, T11 at the API, T6 at Phoenix, has had some great finishes. And then Masters, 23rd and a T12 in a couple appearances here. So I think he's a guy I'm really eager to see how he does this week. I do have some tournament long bets on him, but look, going to be targeting him in first round leader market as well. Those are the two that I had circled early. We'll see where else I end up on. I think there's a couple other guys that I will look at. But right now, those are the two that I did circle early.
Last one on the Masters before we switch over to NBA. There's just so many different ways to bet. This tournament, any tournament's top debutant, top nationality, finishes. I mean, there's just a million ways to cut it. If you can think of it, you can pretty much bet it, especially with this tournament. What did I miss? What else you want to throw out there?
Yeah, I'll go through a couple other placement markets bets and then a couple props that I've bet as well. I do love Colin Morikawa this week. I'm a sucker for Morikawa. I think he's a name that you're going to hear fairly often this week. I just think there's questions on whether this guy can close right now, or at least for me there is, on whether he can close out a tournament. So I bet a top 10 on him at plus 140. I like that bet. I'm fine betting that and leaving it alone. There's just been Look, there's questions about the guy that when he's won, it's kind of been during COVID times, and there's questions about, hey, can this guy win when the pressure's on Sunday and the crowds are out in force? And I think it's becoming a little bit of a legit question when it comes to his game. So for me, I'll just be sticking to placement market bets with him right now. I think a top 10 play on him is one I'm excited about, but I'm not going all the way for an outright play on him. Let's see, top 20s. I did a bet pretty heavily. I mentioned Strock already. I mentioned Robert McIntyre. Corey Connors is the other one that I really haven't done much with this year. And I think he's flying a little bit under the radar, but he has put together some really good results here recently. T18 at the Valero, T8 at the Valspar, T6 at the Players, third at the API. He's really heating it up, doing it almost everywhere with every club in his bag. And this is a guy that's played well at the Masters before too. So I think he's a name that's maybe flying under the radar a bit more that should be on people's cards. I think a top 20 play at around plus 160 is a good bet. I bet a lot of tournament matchups, more than I was expecting. I think there are, I'm trying to think like a couple, like I'm picking on a couple guys, Max Homa. Like I played Zach Johnson in a matchup over Max Homa. Never thought I'd be doing that in a million years, but Max Homa has missed 4 straight cuts, I believe is what he's up to. His game is a mess right now. Saw some stuff just today of how long he was out hitting practice shots on the range, which I don't know that builds much confidence for me when you see a guy is searching for something for that long out there on the week of the Masters. And then the one that brought this up on long shots. I do think if you're looking for a zag move when everybody's zigging, if you feel like you're hearing a lot of the same names and you kind of want to go a different direction, Xander Schauffele. The one thing that's holding him back, and the price is a little bit longer on him, it's because of the injury that he's gone through. And yes, since he's come back, his game hasn't been in peak form, but we've seen glimpses of it, Will, and we've seen him playing in the TGL. So he's obviously comfortable enough from a health standpoint to be playing and swinging freely. So I played him at a big plus price, about plus 150 in a matchup over John Rahm. That's how I chose to play him this week. Like, you want to get frisky and play him in an outright in mid-20s, I'm not going to blame you. This guy won 2 majors this past year. He's one of the best major players that is in this field. So you want to tell me you're betting an outright or something bigger on him this week? I got no problems with that at all. For a couple fun props, I don't know how fun these are because you got to be willing to lay some juice. But Phil Mickelson, top senior, minus 150, I have seen wildly different prices. I saw one shop have him about minus 275 in this market earlier today. I think if you're looking at minus 150 or better on that, I think Phil's the play there. He's at least playing somewhat competitive golf over on the LIV Tour, while a lot of these other senior guys, you can't have much expectation for them making a cut. So I think Phil, he makes the cut. He might be battling one or two other guys at that point to win that one. I think that's a good bet. And then, man, I laid a big number. I laid minus 325 for Steven Yeager to be the top German player. The only other guy in that market is Bernhard Langer. Another one of the old dudes who, look, man, Bernhard Langer's been a good golfer for a really long time. Obviously, a major winner and a Masters winner before. And he's been maybe the king of the Champions Tour for about the past 12 years. But, man, his game just really, I mean, it is not nowhere near where it was 20 years ago. And Yeager, while he might not be the cream of the crop when it comes to the PGA Tour, he's still a quality PGA Tour player. I'm willing to lay that kind of price on a bet like that. So those are two of the kind of props that I've fired on so far.
Who is, for people that don't bet golf regularly that are going to bet this tournament, what's usually the best book to get this, or is it just completely differ depending on the market? I know Circa usually has good outright prices. Would you give anybody any sort of guidance in terms of where to bet this stuff, or it's just with all the stuff you got to shop around no matter what?
Yeah, you got to shop around no matter what. I think it's also just really dependent on what state you live in, right? I mean, you and I talk about this stuff a lot, but it's Vegas, I think actually for golf betting, we've got some better options. But I think one of the annoying things is, I've had, Caesars and MGM have prices posted almost immediately, just like they do rest of country. Meanwhile, it's Tuesday afternoon. I'm still waiting on some books to post some stuff here in town. So, hey, you kind of have to make that call of, you really have to decide what's a price point in your mind that you think is a good bet, because maybe like there were a couple, Morikawa, use that top 10 example. I bet that, I think Sunday night or Monday morning, as soon as I saw that open at MGM, and I thought plus 40 at that point was only going to get worse from there. Most places I've looked, it is at least slightly worse than that plus 140, but don't know. Circa's got top 10s and top 20s. They're about to open. They might have a better number, and I might be adding on. So I think that's, if you are living in Nevada, living in Vegas, that's kind of how I'm approaching some of these placement market bets, is I've made them, but I've also left some room to add if I see a longer number that does pop up at some of these later posting shops. But absolutely, if you're East Coast, you got the normal East Coast books available to you. You just got shop around, also compare some things. I think there is, you know, we talk about this with some of the other sports, but with DraftKings and FanDuel having so many markets up, there's ways of making the same, basically the same bet or a similar bet just in a different market at a better price. And I think that's stuff to consider. I mean, who knows? Maybe somebody has a tournament matchup with Steven Yeager and Bernhard Langer posted at a worse number than actually the top German market. Like, that type of stuff you can find more often than you would think. So absolutely, I would check around and shop with even within the same book, make sure to shop around.
Yeah, and I know DraftKings has these boosts, hole to hole, which, look, these books, for the most part, unless you're like cut off or limited, they want your business. They want, you know, they want these sort of instant gratification bets. They're going to throw out promotions. I remember last year and in years past, Tiger was such a good fade hole to hole, especially after the first couple of days when he'd sort of get worn down, where, man, plus 400 to bogey, and like his over under was really shaded Friday. So I think he played well on Thursday, then Friday, Saturday, he was just such a fade. And it's unfortunate from that standpoint. We don't have that this year.
Yeah. And you do get some elevation changes here. This is not an easy kind of walk for some of the, you know, older guys or guys that might have health issues like a Tiger has.
Yeah. Switch gears to NBA. What is the one series Gil and Drew Dinsick did such a good job? I thought it was a fun exercise to go through what the potential first round series would be, the projected first round series would be, and give prices. Just kind of got the juices flowing, got your brain thinking about, you know, what would I bet? Who would I like if these were the matchups and the prices? What is the one matchup, just from a fan standpoint, that you hope we get in the first round?
Man, great question. I think this is going to be a weird one off the top. I'll start with the East. I mean, Celtics Magic. We've seen the Magic give the Celtics a problem before. I mean, like, do I have any concerns that the Celtics are going to win that series? No, but I bet the Magic make it interesting for a game or two, and people holding Celtics tickets out there get a little scared of them. We've seen it before. I think the Magic are rounded into shape kind of again here later in the season. I'm not going to say that they're going to be at the peak form that we saw them early in the year, but man, I think they could at least take a game, maybe two, off Boston. And if they do that early, you know people are going to be losing their minds. They got Boston tickets. So that one, look, I think Pacers-Bucks has turned into a kind of interesting rivalry. And I don't know that we have, you know, something Drew brought up today on a numbers game. I think I have even less faith than he does that we're going to see Damian Lillard here. I don't really know that there's any indication or any level of confidence that I have that he's definitely going to be back for a playoff run. And when you're talking about this Pacers team, man, there's enough on it to like that. I mean, look, you're not going to find a bigger Giannis fan on the planet than me, but he's basically carrying that team right now. And it is too much to ask for him to get them over the finish line just by himself, pretty much. So that, I would imagine Pacers will be a bet for me, and that if that is a matchup between them and the 4-5, and it looks like it probably will be at this point. So that would be the East. The West is fascinating, Wilk. It really is to me, because this is so, so draw dependent on who you get. And you know, NBA, right? We don't reseed. So it turns into a bracket, and kind of right away, you can see how this lines up. And if you're someone like me who's been adding Thunder tickets along the way here for months, man, this could turn into a real easy path, or a path that I like, or a real brutal path along the way. I mean, I don't think if you're holding Thunder tickets like me, you don't want to see Luka Doncic anytime soon. I mean, that guy's been owning the Thunder for about a year now. So that's not one that I'm really excited to see. I think this Clippers team and this Warriors team would both be tough matchups for the Thunder. So, you know, that might be something later rounds that you got to look out for, but who knows? I mean, who knows how this ends up shaking out with the anywhere between the 3 and 8 seed that are pretty much up for grabs still with these final games left to go.
How do you stack them in the West after OKC? If I told you, let's just say, all right, OKC, barring something really unforeseen, they're going to be in the Western Conference Finals. Now, the seeding matters, but who are they going to be playing in your mind?
in the Western Conference Finals. See, that's where this is where the seeding, this is where the standings just get tough, because then you're looking on that bracket, that side of the bracket. I'll say the Warriors or the Clippers if it's possible. I'm going to say one of those two. But, you know, again, one of them might end up in the 4-5 game, 4-5, and then they're playing the Thunder right away. So it might not be able to make it to the finals. But if you're talking about ended up in that 6-7 seed range, I think they could give a run. I don't have much faith in the Houston Rockets. I don't. I think they are a well-rounded, good team. I think if they draw Memphis first round, they probably take care of them. I don't know how much of a future they have beyond that. And honestly, I think anybody else they draw in the first round, I'll probably be a bet against. Look, I think the Lakers, the Nuggets, the Clippers, the Warriors, the Wolves could all get there theoretically to the Western Conference Finals. I think the Thunder are still can overpower any of them. But, man, I'll tell you, I think people are sleeping on the Clippers. I think everybody's woken up to what the Warriors can do and how good they are. They're probably my second best team in the Western Conference right now. And then it's Clippers, Nuggets right behind them. I mean, Nuggets just fired a head coach, got rid of a GM. Jamal Murray's health status is up in the air. So even any faith you had in the Denver Nuggets and the best player in the world, and Nikola Jokic, I think you've got to be – that faith has got to be teetering a little bit right now. So, really, I think Warriors and Clippers are the biggest threat to the Oklahoma City Thunder in the West.
What was that with the firing of not only Malone, but the GM goes? I know Malone made some comments after the game. I think it was on Monday night about, you know, we got to show them the film. They're not going to watch it on their own. Basically taking shots at his team, which he's been hard on his team before. But, man, less than 2 years removed from a title. Last year they had the weird game 7 at home against Minnesota where they just couldn't score. I'm still shocked they lost that game. But it feels harsh. It feels like there's something more going on than just wins and losses.
Yeah, hearing some of the – I mean, I'll be honest. I've been working so hard on Masters prep. I really missed that kind of Monday night press conference. And with the great Zach Cohen, a VSiN contributor, was filling me in a bit on it today. Man, yeah, some wacky things. That film comment was weird about basically you can't get any of the players to watch film unless a coach is doing it right there with them. And then just hearing some of the instant reaction from some of the Denver reporters and stuff, it just sounds like that team is more fractured than it has been in years, from basically top to bottom inside that locker room and inside that front office. And ownership just felt like they had to make a move now to try to save anything left with this season. So if that's what's going on, I guess I kind of get it, Will, but man, you're between Taylor Jenkins and Malone, you're going to have some very, very sought after head coaches, I think, on the free agency market, basically this offseason for some NBA teams out there.
Yeah, and you got the best player in the world, and he's been that for a few years now, and they really have not put much around him. I know they won the championship a couple of years ago, but they let little pieces here and there go out the window. They really haven't or get out the door. They haven't really added since, and you might look in 3 or 4 years, and Jokic just has that one run now. He's still got some runway left, but you know, you wonder how the rest of Jokic's career plays out. Does it play out in Denver? Does he get help around him? It's fascinating to see where that goes.
Well, and also just, you know, what was his level of involvement, if anything, in this, right? I mean, it's the NBA. You have to ask that question. I think all of us think of Nikola Jokic as not that type of guy that we really think is banging down the door of the head coach or the GM demanding changes. But, man, it's gotten to the point, because I've said that about other players. I've said that about Giannis in the past, too. And it's gotten to the point in the NBA. If you see a head coach go, you have to question whether the star player was involved in that move or not. So who knows? And who knows, does that make Nikola Jokic fully happy? Or is this a guy that's looking to move on? And the idea of a franchise, I'll extend this to Giannis too, because it could very well happen with him. The idea of those two franchises losing players like this, when they've tried to do everything they can to build around them and to build, continue to build championship teams and rosters around them and to possibly let them slip through their fingers, is just an incredible idea.
Kelly, you're the best, man. Any other NBA thoughts? Who we got finals in 30 seconds? Who wins a championship? Who's in the finals and who wins?
Oklahoma City Thunder over the Celtics. But one thing I did add about a week ago, Will, if you want to pivot a little bit, how about an exacta with the Clippers over the Boston Celtics? About 100-1.
Clippers over the Celtics 100-1.
No, sorry, I had it reversed. Celtics over the Clippers. So Clippers
that still pays 100-1?
100-1, yep.
Where can you get that?
Was what I betted. I bet it at MGM, I believe.
I don't know that I can do the Kawhi thing again, but I understand it.
That team is – so that's what's tough. It's a lot of the same pieces, but such a different team this year. Zubac has been an absolute beast all year long. Nobody talks about him. He should be much, much more discussed in the Defensive Player of the Year race. James Harden has been consistently good all year. Norman Powell forced into a new role this year and has taken advantage of every single minute, being the leading scorer on that team for the majority of the season. That's how good he's been. And then we think about – Paul George, his exit opened up them the opportunity to bring in some other players that has made them deeper and a little bit more versatile. You get better defenders on the perimeter. You bring in Bogdan Bogdanovic, who I think could be a threat as a shooter in the playoffs. And then, yeah, man, yes, of course, it's going to come down to Kawhi Leonard. But if Kawhi Leonard can recapture just some of that glimpse of brilliance that we've seen before, this team's right up there, man. They're right up there.
And there's one name you didn't mention who I think is a big factor with that team, Van Gundy. I think Van Gundy, I saw a stat that they've held more teams under 100 than anyone else. He's a good coach. I miss him on TV. I'm surprised he never got another head coaching opportunity. I always thought he was a good coach. I think he's done a good job with them. He's a little old school. It's not like he's one of those old school guys where he doesn't want to hear the analytics and he's, you know, poo-poos. He's got a nice blend. Just look, from listening to the games for, you know, well, he was the lead guy for 15, 20 years, forever. He gets the game so well. He points out things that you never would think of. He's a really good basketball mind. I think he really has really helped them.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll see what that coaching staff can do with this team, man. I'm excited about the Clippers. I think they can make a deep run in a very stacked Western Conference playoffs.
Kelly, where can we find you, man? Appreciate it.
Yeah, at Kelly Bidlin on Twitter. Hit me up there. Long Shots pods are up now. For if you want more deeper Masters talk before we tee off on Thursday morning, go check it out.
Kelly, we'll do it again soon, man. Appreciate the time. Thanks.
Yep, thank you, Will.
All right, thanks to Kelly Bidlin. Rate, review, subscribe, goldboys.com. Go there, check out the Discord. We will be back Friday. See you then.